Hello and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 52, Flarsky, from 2019. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi, but Joey, are you sure it's called Flarsky?
Wait, did I watch the wrong movie?
No, I don't think so.
We joked for a while about how she was coming out with a movie called Flarsky, and I was so excited because it's such a terrible, a weird name for a movie.
Very strange.
And then they're like, just kidding, it's called Long Shot now. And I was like, damn it, more marketable, I guess, in a few different ways. Like, it's a nice pun, it's a nice play on words. Instead, we lost Flarsky. In the midst of all those changes, we lost Flarsky.
It's still the main character's name, which I was not expecting. It's his last
name. So yeah, when I was watching this, because this is the first time you saw this, right? I saw this in theaters, but you did not.
No.
You first saw it this week, right?
I watched it today, yeah.
So when I was in the theaters watching this movie, supporting Charlize Theron like the fan that I am.
Why don't you just twist the knife in my back?
His name is Fred Flarsky. I was like, wait, that's what the movie's called? Flarsky? Like, I guess it's about him. Like, I guess it's kind of his movie. Calling it Long Shot makes it more about her movie, but also him. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a better title, but I still miss the fact that it's called Flarsky.
Flarsky, I wonder if there's any posters out there with that title on there that are collector's items. I will be on the lookout for you.
So this is our first episode of Watch the Throne since our award show, the first movie we've done since Tully. I mean, it's been a year just about since we last did a movie. She's been acting, obviously, in this. She's going to be in the new animated Addams Family movie coming out this year. There's news that she'll be in Fast and Furious 9, which I'm very excited about. I just realized, I was talking to Joe the other night because he was on our Fate of the Furious episode, because he and I have a Fast and Furious podcast, and I realized that when Fast 9, and if she's in Hobbs and Shaw 2, or Fast 10, or whatever she's in, we not only have to do it many, many, many times for Too Fast, Too Forever, but we have to do it on here, too. So, like, he's like, I'll be on that episode if you want. I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, there's no way you're not going to be on the episode, because, like, you're the Fast and Furious guy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's our thing.
Yeah.
We're not going to be like, oh, yeah, me and Mike are going to talk about it. Like, you know, go fuck off. Like,
no. Yeah, he's the Watch the Throne, Too Fast, Too Forever, Fast and Furious, Hobbs and Shaw, Charlize consultant. So he needs to be here for that. And
he's the resident cipher historian.
I was looking forward to the Addams Family, but then I saw a couple snippets, and not that it's bad, it just looks geared much more towards children. And
yeah.
I'm like, with this cast, they should have done this live action again.
Yep.
Because her and Oscar Isaacs would be perfect live action role, so kind of bummed about that, but looking forward to it at the same time.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for it before one of the movies that I saw this week, and I just was like, I feel like it's not the kind of trailer that's going to spoil things for me. And you know, she sounds good, but again, she would look great as a live action Morticia. Oscar Isaac would look great as a live action, don't know his name,
Gomez.
What's his name? I appreciate what the movie can do in terms of, you know, like an animated Cousin It and The Hand and everything like that, and like, it looks great. But I agree that I'd rather have a live-action thing, especially given how far CGI has come, that you could do that stuff probably in a live-action movie anyway.
Yeah, you could even still have, like, Chloe Grace Moretz play Wednesday in live-action, but sort of de-age her or sort of do stuff digitally to the characters and, like, you know, whoever's playing Pugsley, you know, fatten him up and stuff. So.
Oh, well, whatever.
Oh,
but
well.
Here we are to talk about Long Shot, the 2019 rom-com of the two. I'm going to save my idea for a sec, or my opinion for a second.
Okay.
We also did this summer, Always Be My Maybe, over on Keanu Club, the other sort of major rom-com this year.
Mm-hmm.
Not Keanu in the love lead there, it's Randall Park and Ali Wong.
Yeah.
But here we are, another rom-com new movie for one of our main podcast people. Which of these two did you like more? Did you like this one more, or do you like Always Be My Maybe more?
I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah?
Yeah, and it's not that I didn't like Always Be My Maybe. By the way, Randall Park doing his little cameo in this movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
Little connection there. It's not that I didn't like that. I just, there's something, maybe it's just the level of acting or the writing, or that I'm just more into Charlize and Seth Rogen or whatever it may be. Or I kind of, in the political bend on this was a little more sort of fresh for me, I guess, as well, because it, you know, gets into a lot of politics and stuff. That one, there's nothing wrong with Always Be My Maybe whatsoever. I think it's like totally enjoyable and totally fine, and Keanu's terrific in those moments. I just really enjoyed this movie. It kind of turned my mood around. I was laughing a lot, and I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I think this is a really fun movie. I think one of the knocks that I saw on Letterboxd that I didn't immediately agree with, and I think I sort of softened on, a lot of this can be kind of forgettable, but I think that's also fine. Like, I don't know that really a rom-com needs to be ultra memorable.
Yeah.
And I think that this is fun once they get together, and sort of the second act of the movie, and especially through the drug trip, I think it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I think it's just, it's Charlize in a silly way that we haven't really seen her much. I like that she plays the Secretary of State. I like that she has this like dignified position. I like in the very, very end, spoiler, she becomes President of the United States. Like, I like a lot about this movie. I don't remember, like, I'm not going to remember a lot about this as time goes on, but I know this is a movie that I enjoy, and especially since we don't have a lot of rom-coms, and knowing that I sort of discovered my love of rom-coms through Cage Club, kind of, and sort of especially loving rom-com Cage, you know, this is kind of movie that I would put on maybe a couple, like, once or twice a year and just sit back and enjoy. Especially given my recent bend toward Julia
Oh,
Roberts
yes.
and watching Pretty Woman, the song Must Have Been Love that is
It
so
must have
iconic
been love.
in that movie that is used here twice, and it's just wonderful. And now, in comparison to that movie, I think that one is obviously going to, people aren't going to be talking about this movie in 30 years. Like, people aren't going to be including iTunes cover art from Longshot in a movie made in
They're
2050.
not going to be talking about Andy Serkis's makeup performance.
No, I do not think
Oh
so.
my God.
Like, Pretty Woman is going to stand the test of time, obviously, but I think that this movie is in a way better because both leads are likable. Like, Richard Gere's character in that movie, and this is not a podcast about Pretty Woman, but his character is so gross and sketchy and sort of like championing Republican ideals, which I guess Little Ice Cube does in this one too. But it's just like, it's hard to root sometimes for Richard Gere, especially in the more woke culture that we're in now. But I feel like for both of their flaws and their faults, both Flarsky and Charlotte in this movie are both likable. And it's just fun. It's just it's a breezy good time for the most part.
Yeah, I think this is a really solid modern take on relationships and all that kind of like I really buy these two as well. Like, I think they've got good chemistry. I like Charlize as Secretary of State. Like, she's definitely owning that role. I like Seth Rogen as sort of, I mean, I wouldn't say he's less of a stoner in this, but he's definitely more of like a responsible person, right? With like ideals and stuff, and like you know, has like opinions that he's trying to stick to with his reporting and everything. I think all that works. What kind of like just tipped it for me sometimes was like the tone was a little off, but then I just realized they're trying, you know, this is sort of like a 40-year-old date movie for like couples or, you know, even wed couples. And so they're trying to, you know, obviously go for everybody here. And so I excuse that. And that's also just a very rom-com sort of thing as well that I accept and everything. And there's not as much of that as I was thinking they were going to go to. Like, they just sort of sprinkle that stuff in. So I don't mind when it goes like full rom-com. And I don't know, man. I just like was laughing the whole time. And like, it gets really like crass and filthy without being like nasty or mean and stuff. You know what I mean? It's able to sort of tote this line that's very delicate, especially like this day and age and bringing up issues with like Pretty Woman and stuff. And yeah, this might not last forever, but in the moment, like, I'm definitely feeling it. I'm definitely liking it. I'm having a good time. It's a very good watch. I'd say that's one issue. Maybe it's a little long, right? Like, it's
It is
2 hours and like 10 minutes or something. And I'd say you could probably just trim things here and there. You might not need the Skarsgård cameo, even though, you know,
I
he
think you
does a
need
good
him because
job.
I think it. I feel like he's needed for a couple of reasons. I think that number one, you need to have someone that like the public wants to see with Charlize. Like, I think it sets up in the early in the movie when she's like, I'm running for president. They do that focus group led by Lisa Kudrow, and she's saying, you know, if you were with this guy, like, people would like you even more. Like, I think you need something there. Maybe you don't need as much of him as there is, but I think you need that. And I also think, as the movie goes on, I think there needs to be some kind of balance, maybe not, but I think there needs to be some kind of balance between will Flarsky get the girl, not only just because the public wouldn't like it, but like there has to be, I think, another actual tangible threat.
Yeah.
Like, I agree with that it has to be shorter, but I think that is sort of to the story they're telling kind of essential.
Maybe there wasn't enough of it for the running time is my issue now then, because what I was sort of lacking too is that they basically meet cute and like kind of fall for each other immediately. And I might have liked something more where there was like, you know, some time there where they grew to like each other again, as opposed to be like, oh, this is a friend of mine from back in high school. I'm going to give him a job, help him out, get him back on his feet, all this kind of. And then over the course of time, like, they grow to love each other. But it just kind of seems like they want to jump into bed immediately. And that's okay and everything. But I just feel like maybe the lack of a foil, like not having Skarsgård there as much, didn't make that as believable or something something. I don't know. There was just a little bit of, like, more time maybe needed before they did it, but, like, it's still good.
I think in the movie, the relationship between Flarsky and Charlotte, the timeline makes sense. Like, I think what you want to see is there. I just don't think that they show it on screen. Like, I think that there's enough time between him writing the script and then him actually getting in bed with her. I think there's enough time there. I think that it's just super compressed. And I agree that sort of could be or should be fleshed out more. But again, I don't know what you cut out. Like, I can't describe how or why this movie is 2 hours long. Yeah. Like, it doesn't feel 2 hours long, but it also feels 2 hours long.
I know.
Like, if this was like an hour 40, I think I would watch it. I watch it a couple times a year because I think that there's so much fun to be had here, especially if you kind of condense it. I don't know how you do that because I don't know what you cut out.
Yeah, because there already is like the montage when they're going to, like, you know, all those different countries and stuff. So they're already condensing this a lot as it is. And I feel like, you know, when it's stretching or sitting, it's not that it's bad. It's just like it falls into sort of, I was getting kind of like a 40-year-old virgin type of rhythm to it where maybe they started improv-ing and it's actually like working and they, you know, so scenes became extended or expanded. Like, we have Bob Odenkirk as the president here, right?
Yeah.
And that shit is gold, right? And it seems like they just wanted him to come in and do his lines and then do whatever he wanted. And, like, they went with that or something. And it seems like there's multiple times where it's things are not planned. Like, when Flarsky comes down, I guess they're in Switzerland or something, and he's wearing that ridiculous, like, outfit, makes him look like the Prince of Candyland. And Charlize has,
Captain Crunch's grinder date is what he calls himself.
And Charlize is, like, the world's greatest spit take and starts, like, cracking up hysterically. And I'm like, well, I really wondered if she even ever saw him before then, you know, in that outfit or whatever, if they surprised her to get that reaction. So I can see, like, where it's sort of becomes longer, but it's not like it's necessary stuff, but I would kind of miss it because him and O'Shea Jackson Jr., right, Ice Cube's son, they're great. I love that guy. And Charlize and June Diane, like, she's great. Like, everyone, like, I don't want to lose stuff, but it feels like things need to go somewhere.
It doesn't feel poorly made or poorly paced or poorly constructed. I just think that in a time where it seems like every movie is 2 hours and most movies don't have to be 2 hours, that it should probably be shorter. But I think it works as is. I think ultimately it's like 2:05, and I think there's like 8 minutes of very slow credits. So I think it actually technically clocks in under two, but it's still kind of a lot of movie for relatively a simple story.
I mean, maybe that's like the rom-com of it all, is like, maybe they're all kind of like that. Like, I'm just not familiar. I know we're going to get there a bit with Hanks soon enough. Like, he does a couple rom-coms, so maybe that's just a staple of it. Maybe it's just, you know, go get your money's worth with these movies.
Because I think you need, like, in terms of the beats, like, they need to meet cute in some way, and then they need to have the relationship, then they need to break apart, and they break up, and then they need to get back together. So, like, there's a lot of story there, and if you rush it, it doesn't feel authentic or genuine. Like, a lot of the movies that I watch, Julia Roberts movies I watch for Julia Roberts, for my mini little binge that I actually, I don't know if I told you, but I recorded just a special bonus episode of Not Her Again with Michael Domenico.
Oh, excellent.
He's on a couple of our podcasts. He and I just talked about the five things that I watched. But I think, like, all those, I think Pretty Woman was 2 hours. I think Notting Hill is like 2 hours. I think My Best Friend's Wedding is close to 2 hours. Like, I think a lot of them are in that ballpark. And, you know, I guess ultimately, if the movie's fun and the movie's good and you like it, which we both do, and I think most people who watch this do, it's not the worst thing. But every movie should probably be shorter.
Yeah, because, like, in this one, I don't know about most rom-coms, like, but in this one, on top of, like, what they have to do, there's also, like, the main B story of her, like, passing the bill and him writing her speeches. And you know what I'm saying? Like, there's all this other stuff that they want to get to as well. So it's stuff on top of
which
stuff.
Which I appreciate because it gives her legitimacy as Secretary of State. Like, she has a mission, right? Like, it's not just, oh, she's Secretary of State and she's positioning herself for president. Like, she has a thing that she actually wants to do. Like, it gives her credibility. A way you could make this shorter is either make this purely his movie or purely her movie, right? And cut out one of the other storylines.
Yeah.
And basically, like, they're just the object of affection one way or the other, right? But I think that by giving each character wants and desires and things that they're actually going after, both professionally and personally and all that, it makes both characters more fully fleshed out. And I think maybe the movie does that a little bit too much with other characters, like June Diane and Ravi Patel, I think is his name. Maybe they're a little too fleshed out, but again, I like them. And I like going back to the Fox News-esque Wembley report where it's Kurt Braunohler and Paul Scheer and Claudio Doherty, because I love all three of them, and just them, like, being the biggest assholes ever on TV. Like, I like that, and I don't mind spending 3 or 5 minutes of the movie with that. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, there's so much to like here. I guess that's our point. Like, we don't know what to cut out.
Yeah. And what's even more interesting for me was, like, I really felt the payoff for both of these characters' turns is, you know, like, Seth Rogen or Flarsky comes to realize his best friend tells him, like, you know, you never think about anything from anyone else's point of view, all this, that, like, you won't even give, like, Republicans a chance. You didn't realize, like, your best friend's down with the GOP, like, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, like, it really kind of makes his character realize, yeah, I have to, like, change if I want to be with her. And she also has the same sort of realization. Like, they rub off on each other. I felt that, and it worked. And so maybe the length, you know, had something to do with that, you know? Maybe you just sit with these characters longer, and that's the point. Get used to them, and so you want to see them together, and luckily their chemistry is working. And I loved her at the end when she was like, you know, if I could see myself as a kid, if I could see myself now, I'd be disappointed and all this stuff. And it was like the moment in the kitchen came back.
It's set up right, right? Like, you see her as a kid, and then the reason they bond, like, the a lot of the fun and games before they actually get together, like them getting to know each other, is him like, I was so disappointed in you, like, because I can't believe that some, like, the girl that I knew from high school would never drop the trees. You know, like, she would fight for this, she would care for this. And then, like, the way that they bond is basically remembering high school and talking about her favorite movies and her favorite songs and her favorite books and all that. Mm-hmm. And you sort of get a sense of who she was, even though we only see her as 16-year-old Charlotte once for, like, 3 minutes, maybe. You know who she was as a kid, and you know how they were interacting as a kid. And I think that in the end, like you're saying, when she references, you know, young me would be so disappointed, it rings true because you know that's the case.
I mean, that was really nice. I don't get that kind of resolution satisfaction from a lot of movies, I feel. So maybe I should be watching more rom-coms because, you know, it's
absolutely.
It totally stuck the landing, and I really, like, that goes a super long way. And I do love how they set her up too as sort of being, you know, out of touch, and not necessarily because she's not cool or anything, but just because she's, like, super busy, right? So, like, she sort of clung to things. So when she hears Boys to Men, she gets super excited as Seth Rogen gets to be invited to see Boys to Men. And, you know, she mentions, like, 90210, and they don't prey on the nostalgia either. They just sort of dropped it here and there just to give you a sense of deeper sense of who she is. Like, her personality, her social sort of life and things. And so it was nice, just like the right amount.
Yeah. If people are listening to this, unless they listen to our 3-hour episode 1000 podcast, which was released on this feed, they might not know that you and I have two new podcasts, the Tom Hanks podcast and Tom Cruise podcast, every Friday, alternating what we call the Tom Tom Club. And so changing things up a tiny little bit from how we did Watch the Throne. Instead of just going through the entire movie, we pick out some moments, our favorite moments, our least favorite moments. I think we've been talking about a lot of them sort of in broad strokes here. Like, well, if you had to pick one, what was your favorite? Because there's a couple things that I got in mind, but what's your favorite moment? What's your favorite part about Longshot?
Okay. It's definitely when they do Molly.
I want to smoke a Molly with you.
He's like, that's not how you do it. But it's not just that part. It's when she has to save the hostages.
Yes.
That part. That's incredible. Like, I know she won't be, but, like, that's the kind of performance I wish more people were nominated for. Not, like, an especially important movie, but you find these fucking moments like this that are just, like, to me, that was, like, Oscar-worthy. I fucking loved it when she, like, took out the cigarette and didn't take off the sunglasses and, like, sat in the corner and was, like, negotiating.
Her victory, hostage saved, motherfucker.
Exactly.
As on the fence as I am with the Golden Globes splitting drama from musical or comedy, I think that this is the kind of role that could or should get nominated or sort of recognized in musical or comedy. In terms of where the Academy votes and what they've deemed important or not, like, you're right, like, this is never going to sniff anything, right? Like, her other movie that she's coming out this year, which is coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, about, you know, Roger Ailes and the whole Fox News thing, right? Like, Fair and Balanced, or whatever the movie's called. That one, that feels like more of an Oscar baity, where she might get nominated as Megyn Kelly, right? Like, feels like if she's going to get award recognition in 2019, it'll be for that. It won't be for this. But I feel like this is going to be the more interesting, sort of nuanced performance. I mean, I don't want to talk ill of a performance that we have not seen, but I just know that what this has been and what that movie is likely to be, she might be quote-unquote acting in, like, the Academy Award dramatic sense more there. Mm-hmm. But I think in terms of what you're saying, in terms of what's engaging, what's the kind of thing that we haven't really seen, this feels new and it feels exciting, and her, like, stoned out of her mind and trying just to handle, like, a legitimate crisis while smoking a cigarette, hiding in the corner, you know, basically whispering to some guy overseas. Like, it's wonderful.
Yeah, I really feel like there's a lot in this movie of Charlize we haven't really seen before. Like, there's a whole other side of her here, and I wonder if that, you know, has something to do with she's hanging out with, like, Paul Scheer and June Diane Raphael now, and, you know, going on their podcast after,
How's
right?
Get made. Yeah.
Yeah, because, mm-hmm. like, it seems like they must have all, like, hit it off, and, like, she just was able to be comfortable and, like, let it out, and they all play really well together, so I don't know. I felt like this was a whole different side of her in stuff, like, she either hasn't gotten a chance to do something like that, maybe, or just that I never thought I'd see, like, her be so, seem so carefree, loose, and natural in this movie. Like, just not even really feel like acting, per se, just sort of being.
You know, I think that that moment that you described, that we've been talking about, her high and trying to negotiate the downed helicopter pilot behind enemy lines, like, that's probably my favorite moment, too. But I think there's two other things that kind of bring me sort of to the verge of rom-com tears. Number one is when they go to their second gala, I think, and, you know, she's got to negotiate or talk to, like, 100 people or whatever. There's, like, 180 nations there. She's got 3 hours. He's like, hey, you know, if you want to get a drink or whatever, but, like, I get you're busy. And then they kind of steal away to the back room and they dance to Must Have Been Love. And, like, that's just so cute and so sweet. And the way that, like, it zooms out, like, that they're having a moment that even we're not privy to. Like, I love that. And then there's just something about the very end, like, as sort of corny and goofy as it is, where, like, she becomes president, he becomes the first mister. Shout out to Weird Coincidence, Weird Timing, this week's episode of Real Bad, another podcast on the network. They covered Spawn, and I just think it's funny that, like, I completely forgot about the joke, but that he had his first mister portrait painted by Todd McFarlane,
yes.
the author, the, you know, the artist behind Spawn, and, like, it's just, like, this, like, badass, like, American flag, eagle flying over, like, bare-chested, tattooed or whatever, like, it's just crazy and over the top, and just, it's so cute and so sweet. And then they slam cut into Robin's Dancing on My Own, which is, like, a perfect song, and, you know, especially from Now and Again, shout out to another podcast on the network, you know, but, like, Nico and Chris over there just love Robin, and I really like Robin because of them. There's something about, like, the emotions of the movie, like, it's kind of the corny, cheesy ending that you sort of assume is going to happen, that 10 minutes in the movie, she's like, okay, I'm on my way to become president, you know, Bob Odenkirk not seeking re-election, wants to do that tough, tough thing of going from TV to movies, a thing that only 10 people have done. He can only name two. Did not mention our boy Tom Hanks, though. Tom Hanks went from TV to movies.
Really?
Also, there's sort of the in-joke here that Seth Rogen went from TV to movies. He started out with Freaks and Geeks, and now he's in movies, too, right? So
that's right.
10 minutes in, you're like, okay, she's going to become president, because, like, the, you know, Odenkirk's not seeking re-election. He endorses her. Whatever's going to happen, like, it's not like there's going to be a rom-com, I don't think, with, like, a real bummer or downer of an ending. So, like, you know she's going to be president. You know they're probably going to get together. There's going to be a happy ending. And yet, in spite of all that, the way that it's cut together, the way it's edited, all that, it's just wonderful. And, like, the song especially, like, everything about the end is exactly what you think it's going to be, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it is. It's really sweet, and it's not even like they're really leaning hard into, like, the, like, flipping the gender thing. I don't know. I don't feel like they're really pouring it on and saying, like, oh, now he's the first lady. It's like, no.
Other than him taking her last name. Hi, my name is Fred Field. I took my wife's last name.
Well, I mean, like, she is the president, but...
Right.
I think why it ends up so sweet in the end like that is because they do that throughout the entire movie. Like, you know, they really know when to say what time they're making this movie in. And they're not going too far in either direction to say, like, Charlize is indestructible. She's not a Mary Sue or anything in this, you know? But then again, like, Seth Rogen isn't completely hapless and a total idiot stoner loser. Like, everybody is sort of written as, like, a normal person to a degree. And I don't know. I don't know if they nailed it exactly, but I appreciate, like, the effort involved in trying to sort of, like, level these people out more like that and not be so one-dimensional.
There is also a little bit of a reversal, like you're saying, you know, they do it all movie long. And I feel like it's probably pretty split, but I think in the end, you know, when Charlotte's on screen saying that she's quitting, she quits Secretary of State to become, or to run for president, but then, you know, she admits that she loves Flarsky on TV, and then Andy Serkis, and we'll get back to Andy Serkis in a minute, like, flips out, and he's like, put the masturbating video online, like, because the whole twist of this movie is that they hacked Seth Rogen's computer and found videos, like, they were web chatting, he and Charlize, and he was, you know, masturbating and came on his face, and so they released that or whatever. Like, it's the dumbest and also the most, like, it makes the most sense in the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I like that there, what feels like traditionally the female role in both regards, but, like, O'Shea Jackson Jr. just like, run to her, go get her. Like, but it just feels like that's generally, I know it's split, but it feels like generally it's like the woman running to the man, right? Like, it just feels like that sort of kind of is that. But here it's like Flarsky, again, traditionally in a lot of ways here, not necessarily the masculine role or whatever, but I love that he's just like, I've got to go get her. Like, she's the one for me. And then he goes and gets her. And then, you know, she introduces him as her boyfriend. And it's just, it's cute. It's sweet.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Andy Serkis. Let's talk about...
My least favorite part of the movie?
Is it really?
I think so.
So hold on, let me describe. There's a quote. The only really worthwhile trivia about this movie so far on IMDb is that this might change your tune, because I don't think it necessarily makes it better, but it makes it weirder. After Andy Serkis accepted the role of Parker Wembley, he developed a prosthetic makeup design for his character that required hours a day to execute, even though no one asked him to.
I knew it. I said to Andrea when we found out that it wasn't an old person, that it was Andy Serkis, I said, I bet he showed up and was like, you know what? I'm tired of having dots on my face and wearing an orange sock or whatever. Like, I'm going to make up myself, and I'm going to, if they want it, they can use it, and if not, they can go to hell.
So apparently when they were doing press junkets for this tour, like, everybody, you know, the director, Charlize, Seth Rogen, everybody told the same story, like, yeah, he just did this. And so Seth Rogen said, we offered him the role, and then he was like, okay. And then he started sending ideas for what he would look like. And we were like, what do you mean? I thought he kind of looked a lot like Andy Serkis. But he's like, no, I got this whole thing. We were like, whatever, man. And then he just shows up as this crazy, over-the-top, like, old guy. It's like, oh.
It's too much. It's a very...
Also, keeping in mind, knowing who I am and knowing what my weakness is in terms of identifying people, I had no idea that was Andy Serkis in theaters. Like, I didn't care. I was just like, oh, it's just an old guy. Whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, he's acting sort of like a young guy in an old guy's body, but still.
Yeah, like, I didn't know it was him until after the movie, but we're sitting there watching this thing going, like, what's wrong with this person? Like, there's something up with, like, he's not, like, either that's an old guy that they made up more, or a young guy, they did stuff to, like, there was something off about that character, and it just, I couldn't. And then on top of, like, just the terrible person the character was too, it was even harder for me to pay attention. I was just like, oh my god. And then I found out it was Andy Serkis, and like, my head just like hit the floor.
And once you know it's him, like, it's impossible to not see him, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, oh, that's very clearly him. But still, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, he did a thing.
It's too much, dude. It's so much.
I'm not saying it's not. I just think that the story behind it is bananas.
I can't believe it. I mean, like, of course I can believe it. I imagined it, and it actually turned out to be true and everything, but, like, that's the only way. Because I was saying, like, Andy Serkis is a great actor. You know, he looks totally normal without any of that stuff on. He would have been fine as, like, this, you know, 55-year-old media conglomerate. You didn't have to be like this Rupert Murdoch-esque kind of parody thing. It's just the one thing, because everyone else in the movie looks fine and no one's doing that. And so it's just like when Mike Myers hosts the Gong Show, you know, in like that full makeup as like in a British accent. It's like, what are you doing exactly? Like, no one else is playing dress up this hard. But,
you know, I don't know if this is actually my least favorite part, but I'm going to continue railing against this. After I originally, when we saw this in Logan Lucky, I was like, I like it, it's funny. The more movies and shows that do it, the more I'm like, this has to stop.
Uh-oh.
But my least favorite thing in this movie, I think, might be Charlize referencing, like, there's just a joke about Game of Thrones. Like, oh, I understand that everyone talks about Game of Thrones, and, like, that's not going away, and people, if they're watching this movie in 5 or 10 or 20 years, is going to, like, they're going to know what Game of Thrones, even if they don't watch Game of Thrones, they know that it's a cultural phenomenon, right? One of the big complaints that Joe and I had that we talked about for a while in our Hobbs and Shaw spoiler episode is the kind of the recurring joke, the throwbacks, the callbacks, like, 3 or 4 times in Hobbs and Shaw to Game of Thrones. And here, I love what it sets up. Like, I like that she's so busy. As a girl, she grew up, you know, loving movies and TV. Like, it seems like that's what they bonded over, her and Seth Rogen. And then as she got older, as she became this, you know, dignified woman, this person with an actual job and responsibilities, she didn't have time for that anymore. And I love that she gets by, that she sort of seems like culturally relevant and with it by reading synopses. Like, I think that's super cool and super funny and super smart and probably, honestly, true. The fact that they keep, like, another movie makes another Game of Thrones reference, it's like, get it. Like, I don't need more of that. I know that's a very minor nitpick and I'm probably blowing it out of proportion, but, like, there's probably at least 3 that I can think of, if not more, movies that came out in the last, like, 18 months that, like, there's kind of, like, a pretty notable, noteworthy joke about Game of Thrones.
There's a very quick one in High Flying Bird, I think, both you and Tobin miss, but like there's a quick like Walter Frey or something reference real quick.
Oh,
so it's like,
yeah.
Who's that? Like Game of Thrones or something. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, I hear what you're saying, man. Like it's here to stay. It's never going away.
Like it's not a big deal. Like again, I don't want to make it seem like this made me like the movie less, because I think that in that same scene, right, like immediately after that, especially, I can't believe that we didn't talk about this much. You especially, given your history with Brian Late Night Rodriguez over on his show, but she does an Encino Man impression.
That's right.
He's a little juice. And he's like, you still have the worst Pauly Shore impression. But like, just seeing, like, I don't like Pauly Shore. I did watch that movie. I didn't enjoy that movie because I didn't grow up with that movie. Mm-hmm. But like, seeing her do it, like, just feels so weird and wonderful. It seems like Charlize loves that, but also the character loves it. Like, it's just such a weird meta moment that I just adore.
What I liked about that Game of Thrones thing is like what you said about it. Just the idea that she needed to read synopsis and stuff to talk at dinner parties and things like that. And like, I just think that was just a nice, you know, notch on her character's belt. Yeah, they kind of cheapened it a little bit, I guess, by going with the easy reference there. But I feel like they went with one or two other ones that weren't so well known. And obviously, I can't remember it now myself. So
I also like that she realizes that she is Encino Man, right? Like she's like, locked away. Like I've been frozen in time, frozen in ice for 30 years. I know nothing. I've been Encino Man. I also like her innocent, like, you know, she's like, my favorite songs must have been Love. And Seth Rogen says, or Flarsky says, my favorite song is Broccoli by Dram featuring Lil Yachty. And she's like, I don't know what any of those things mean.
Right. I think she said like that, all those words are a song.
And then them talking, like, there's just like this getting to know you montage. And she's talking about, you know, she asks Seth, like, you know, what's your favorite sex position? He says, front facing normal. And he's like, well, what's yours? She's like, don't be gross. And Ravi asks June Diane, and he says, what's yours? And she says, it's too complicated to explain, which I don't know what it is, but I just love that as an answer.
I'm sure he's going to find out. I remember now what I was trying to, the modern day reference that I thought was kind of funny, because I hadn't seen this yet in a movie, was when he references the MCU. He's like, you haven't seen any of like the Marvel Universe movies? And then there's a shot of them in Moscow watching the Winter Soldier.
In Russian.
And he's like, you understand this? And she's like, I speak Russian. And then she's like, oh no, the pirate guy.
Oh my God, they just shot the pirate guy, but he's keeping the team together.
I love that. It was the moment when, yeah, Nick Fury gets shot by Bucky. Oh, that was so good. So
it's just like a sweet moment, but I wonder if that's not like a condemnation, but like a kind of a joke about like poor translations. Like if Nick Fury, instead of being Director Fury, is like Pirate Fury. You know what I mean? Like,
because
he's got
awesome.
The patch. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true or not, but I feel like, oh no, I speak Russian, I understand this, but you
well,
know,
yeah.
He's speaking Russian in the movie.
It's like, what did they call Spider-Man in Far From Home when he was like in Italy? He had like a he was like a shadow monkey or something like
oh
that.
yeah.
They had some other name for him. It was like all mistranslated improperly. Mm-hmm. And stuff. So
we have we talked about it earlier, we did not really make special note of it, but we have a young Charlize in this movie.
Oh,
which
yeah,
I think that both young Charlize and young Seth Rogen both were like, they nailed those.
Yeah,
they both looked like them. Like the girl was cute and composed and poised, and he was just like doofy but likable, and like they're both perfect. Related to that was that there's the PowerPoint that June Diane is giving to Charlize later, and she's like, you know, what if Princess Di and Guy Fieri started a relationship, or Kate Middleton and Danny DeVito, or Jennifer Lawrence and Spotato and the Teal Windbreaker? And Jennifer Lawrence played a young Charlize, sort of a spoiler,
oh, yeah.
Right? But
right.
I just like that she was referenced in a movie where she played a young version of Charlize, and then we have another young version of Charlize. So I think that's it's pretty cool.
Do you think they did that because she played young
nah,
Charlize? Or do you think
I
they were
think
on
people,
set? Do you think
yeah.
they even realized that?
No, nope.
I don't either. It's so sad. It's like when you
what
hear
was that
Gwyneth...
movie, Burning Plane?
Yeah, it was good too, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. It's like when you hear Gwyneth Paltrow didn't know she was like in any of the Marvel movies. It's like, what? Or whatever. Like, she met Sebastian Stan, and he's
three
like,
times,
met,
ever, like the first
yeah.
three times. She's like, oh, who are you?
It's like, we're keeping better track than they are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, that's for sure. I like that they kind of empower her in a way that she... Like, the movie is so non-judgmental, and then she's like, oh, yeah, I want you to turn me over and do me from behind and, like, slap me and choke me a little bit. Like, it's just like, mm-hmm. that's what she wants. She knows what she wants. And just, like, it's played so normally. And I like that. Like, it's just, she's, you know, a strong, independent woman who knows exactly what she wants. And if it's, you know, it catches Seth Rogen by surprise, catches Flarsky by surprise, you know, it's what gets her off. And I like that the movie plays that so normally. Like, not that that is, in the grand scheme of things, crazy at all. But I like that that is, I feel like, more aggressive of a depiction of sex than most movies or most women in mm-hmm. movies are allowed to say. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it is played so low-key and normally. Seth Rogen, I think, is the kind of the voice of the audience. Like, oh, like, well, I wasn't expecting to hear that, but I think that she plays it, and they sort of go through with it in such a normal, nonchalant way that, you know, it's noteworthy.
And she makes a nice comment afterwards. She's like, oh, like, I'm your boss and I tell you what to do all day. I shouldn't tell you what to do in bed. And she's like, do whatever you want, and then turn me around, slap my ass, and kind of choke me a little bit, too.
Yep.
It's cool. They're playing with it in a very light way. And that's what I mean. Like, they don't go dark ever, really, with this movie. You know, the most is when he, like, jerks off on his face, and it's like, I was like, is that even possible? And what he's doing, like, what is he even doing? Like,
oh boy.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it never really goes, like, it goes more like cartoon, if anything, right? Like when he, in the opening scene where he has to get the swastika and then he ends up jumping out the window, like, that is Looney Tunes.
I was just laughing at the swastika as like the journey throughout, because he gets the little guy running and it becomes the first Mr. Patch. Like, I like the journey, like the silliness of the journey of that too. But yeah, like him jumping out the window, I held my phone's not broken. So, and then the Nazi upstairs is like, I trusted you, man. Like, just like genuinely heartbroken that, what was it, like, I hate Jews 82 was such a bit, like, so betrayed them so badly.
And then he takes that huge fall down like the other stairs at the gala event, yeah. You know, cracker down. So like, there's a lot of those kinds of moments more than actual people getting hurt or anything. Like, the darkest it gets is when they, Odenkirk and Serkis, blackmail her, right, in the Oval Office, and even that is only like one short scene, so they're really trying to sort of stay away from those vibes.
And I also like that she sort of plays down, like, she doesn't give them any kind of power, because she says on TV, Parker Wembley and our dumb fuck president are doing some illegal shit, and here's what it is, and here's what's gonna happen. They blackmail her, they manipulate her, but she's like, I don't care. Like, it's just, like, it's gonna come out. I'm not gonna live with this over my head. Here's what's happening. So, yeah. I like that.
I wondered if they were sort of playing off of Black Klansman in the beginning of this, and that's a great movie, too, but, I mean, you know, it's when, you know, there's a Jewish guy and a black guy team up to infiltrate the Klan.
Is there anything else you want to talk about with Long Shot? You know, I just want to give one more shout-out to Paul Scheer and Kurt Braunohler and Claudia Rodarte, like, all people I know sort of from the Comedy Bang Bang adjacent world. Like, mm-hmm. Claudia especially is so goddamn funny, and she's the one who at the end quits and throws the coffee mug at Kurt's face just because she's, like, tired of getting sexually harassed on air on essentially Fox News. Like, I love that. Anything else, any other scenes or moments or characters you want to talk about before we wrap up on Long Shot?
First and foremost, man, O'Shea Jackson Jr., terrific. He was in, the most I've seen him was, aside from NWA Straight Outta Compton, but he was in that Aubrey Plaza movie where she was, like, stalking the Instagram girl that was...
Oh, God, Ingrid Goes West. Jesus Christ, that was, oh boy.
I love that movie, and he is great. And that's when I was sort of stood up and was like, I gotta take notice and follow this guy and sort of like watch his movies the way I follow other actors and stuff. And you know, he got a real short changed in this summer's Godzilla. He just played like a soldier with no name, and that really bummed me out because I thought he was going to be like a scientist or something like that. To see him here and to see him like just be boys with Seth Rogen and just them getting along, and like, it's infectious. Like, I really felt like I was just hanging out with these guys. I really liked them, and I just, you know, I look forward to seeing this guy. You know, I think he's going to have a really strong, long career, and it's a little freaky that how much he looks like his dad, Ice Cube, and everything, but,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Ice Cube's not, like, the worst actor either, so, like, maybe it just runs in the family on multiple levels, so.
I also do want to give him credit. I don't know if you've seen yet. I think if you had seen, you would have mentioned, but there's a movie that came out last year called Den of Thieves, where it's very long. It's basically, they kind of remade Heat in a way. Like, there's Gerard Butler and Pablo Schreiber, vigilante cop, kind of, and bank robber. O'Shea Jackson Jr. plays a very pivotal role in that movie, and he's great in that movie. And that's just like a badass bank robbery movie, and like that, definitely go see that. I think it's on Showtime, or it's on one of the movie channels right now all the time. Okay. So if you get the movie channels, it's either Showtime or HBO or Cinemax or whatever, go check that out. Den of Thieves, just a really solid badass bank robbery movie where O'Shea Jackson Jr., Lil Cube, is great.
Nice. The last thing I want to mention is I love how long Flarsky's in his Windbreaker outfit, you know, because he just, like, he just goes to work one day in it and then ends up getting fired or forced to quit. Then he goes to meet his friend and they end up going out all night, and then he, you know, the next morning they're like at the bodega and he gets hired and picked up and goes to Washington, D.C. And then he's like hired to write for Charlize and he's flown like halfway across the world and he still like hasn't had time to change or anything like that. I just thought that was a realistic touch. Like, I thought that was a really funny sort of thing that would happen if you just sort of got swept up, like you just not have time to change his clothes. And that was good continuity.
Similarly, while they're going from location to location and they have like their SUV where they have the driver, and then have the three people, and they're like, oh, well, he's just suddenly with us now. Like, I don't know if you noticed, there's one shot where he's sitting in the hatch, like in the back, and they open the trunk, and he just gets out the back, like he's a little kid in the back of a station wagon. Like, he's not supposed to be there, like, they just don't have room for him, so he's sitting in the back, and, like, they're the actual Secretary of State, like, staffers are in the front with Charlize, and he's just sitting in the back, typing on his laptop, getting out the rear of the vehicle. Like, it's just, like, little things like that that feel real, whether it's the fact that he doesn't have other clothes, or that he's just, there's physically not room for him when they travel. Like, it's just, it's funny.
You know, all these things make up for those very few shortcomings that I found watching this movie. You know, I had a really good experience and a really nice watch this time, so.
Yeah, so go check this out. It's now out on Blu-ray and VOD and everywhere you get that. I'm assuming probably in 2 or 3 months it'll be like on HBO all day, every day, or whatever.
It seems like it'll be one of those movies, right? Like, yeah, it's just going to hit cable hard.
So go check it out. Everybody's good in it. We will be back later this year or early next year, I'd imagine, for Fair and Balanced, the Fox News fictionalized or sort of dramatic reenactment or whatever you want to call it. We'll be back probably early next year for Adam's Family. And then we will be back middle of next year for Fast and Furious 9. Like, there's a lot, like, after sort of a year drought of Charlize, we've got a lot more. Also, again, on my Hobbs and Shaw, like, go check out the Hobbs and Shaw episode of Too Fast, Too Forever. Just go listen to that podcast. But I am convinced, I am dead set convinced, that the voice in Hobbs and Shaw is Charlize. I think it's Cypher. Like, it just, it's the only thing that makes sense to me. If that's true, we got a whole lot more Charlize in the Hobbs and Shaw and the Fast and Furious universe. So we will find out for sure.
My fingers are crossed for Keanu, which would also...
Well, he'll be in there one way or the other, for sure. Because I was also thinking, you know, your theory as you did the ride-along lap with us is that everyone sort of built up the Charlize, right? Like, there was Braga, and then there was Shaw, and then there's Cypher above all of them. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, either... I feel like in terms of the time they have left, either she's top of the top, or she's, like, second in command. And I could obviously see... You know, if they want to add one more person above her, Keanu.
Yeah, the two of them as like this crazy couple in the Fastiverse. Oh, I'd love it.
They want to do a movie together. Why not make it be like, it's not the movie that people would expect, but like, why not make it a Fast and Furious movie? Yeah. That seems perfect.
And they can still, you know, get all Atomic Wick and everything, right? Like, they could do all that stuff in the type of movie, too.
Like, just because she's a crazy computer hacker doesn't mean she doesn't also know martial arts. Who knows? But for all things Watch the Throne, all 52 episodes of this show now, and every other podcast that we've mentioned, and the ones that we have not, you can go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, or at cageclubpod on Twitter and Instagram. Email us, watch@cageclub.me. Check out every Tuesday for now, mostly every other Tuesday, but every Tuesday for now, Too Fast, Too Forever. Every Thursday, Boy for Material. Every Friday, the Tom Tom Club, and the third of the month, and maybe also bonus episodes, 17th of the month, Third Time's a Charm. Go check out all those shows, constantly new episodes, 40 to 50 per month, at cageclub.me or wherever you get this fine podcast. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And we'll be back sometime for some movie or something right here on Watch the Throne. It must have been-